From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. Have you ever wanted to take a peek at the case files of mobsters, bootleggers, and even murderers? This hour we'll look into the underbelly of Leavenworth Penitentiary's records with a local archivist, and we'll get a view of what life was like through the years at the prison. Then, Russia's in the headlines with the Sochi Olympics, and we've got Branson's favorite Russian to talk about them. Yakov Smirnov joins us later in the show. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. With the Olympics being staged in Russia, our old buddy Yakov Smirnov is enjoying a career renaissance. He helped the Today Show's Matt Lauer pack his suitcase. Jon Stewart is calling, and so are we. The longtime Branson fixture joins us later on this hour. But first today, the secrets of the Leavenworth Penitentiary revealed. Mobsters, bootleggers, and even murderers have resided there, and so much of that history is stored in the National Archives of Kansas City. Jake Ersland of the National Archives joins us now to walk us through that rich underbelly of the prison's history. And Jake, so good to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you for having me.
Well, based on some of the photographs I've seen on your website and in a presentation you're going to make here, I think it's safe to say that there are some pretty interesting characters who once were housed at Leavenworth over the years.
Yeah, I mean, there really have been all types of individuals that have gone there. I mean, most... not famous or infamous, but a lot of those stories are just as fascinating as some of the big names that everyone would recognize that of people who have been there.
Now, what's your sense, Jake, from poring over this history? I mean, just how tough a place was Leavenworth for the inmates who actually resided there?
It could be pretty rough. I mean, yeah. Other than just, you know, the prison environment with you're in locked up in a place full of, in many cases, hardened criminals, people in for murder or other such violent crimes. But your freedom is really taken away, too. And you have to follow strict rules of conduct in the prison. You know, the prisons
all the time, right?
Yeah. You have to do exactly what you're told at all times. And if not, you'll lose some sort of privilege.
The most famous inmate who ever resided there would be who?
I guess it depends on who you ask. Of course, there's really famous gangsters like George Machine Gun Kelly. You know, he was at Leavenworth, went to Alcatraz, came back to Leavenworth. there are famous people for other reasons, like Pendergast.
I was going to say Tom Pendergast was there.
Yeah. Very famous individual from this area, very influential, and he spent some time in Leavenworth. And other people that aren't even associated generally with Leavenworth. I mean, you have the Birdman of Alcatraz, Robert Stroud. But you know what? He didn't have birds when he was in Alcatraz. He had birds when he was at Leavenworth for a long time.
Oh, is that right? He didn't have the birds at Alcatraz?
No. The birds were all at Leavenworth and not at Alcatraz.
So why did he get to be known as the Birdman of Alcatraz?
Well, his fame really went up after he went to Alcatraz. And he actually had published some things that he wrote at his time at Leavenworth. So that's why he's associated with Alcatraz, which was a very famous penitentiary at the time as well. So the connection was with Alcatraz because that's where when he became more famous, that's where he was at, even though all of his work with birds was done at Leavenworth.
What did he do? I mean, did he just develop this whole colony of birds that came to visit him because he fed them all the time?
Well, He had found some birds, I believe in the yard even or something like that, and began studying them and taking care of them. And he worked with the prison to, you know, have a special arrangement where he could, you know, order things that he took on his, you know, scientific observations with, and really grew a large colony of birds. And like I said, I had some things published.
Ha. You know, even though Leavenworth's in our backyard, so no question, Jake, that prisoners from all over the country came and stayed here for a time over the years.
Yeah, there were people from all over the country. When Leavenworth was built in 1895, it was one of three federal penitentiaries that were coming online at the exact same time. You had the federal penitentiary at Leavenworth, and also the federal penitentiary at Atlanta, and also McNeil Island up in Washington. So kind of across the nation, spread out. But individuals would be sent to Leavenworth from all over the Midwest, from the Northeast even, you know, from anywhere. You have people from across the country.
Now, there are files available on these inmates that the public can now review. Do I have that right?
That's right. We have in our holdings, the National Archives of Kansas City, 69,937 inmate case files. Now, these date from
and that's the exact number.
That's the exact number.
You got it nailed here.
Yeah, that dates from when the prison opened in 1895 up through 1952. Only. So if you have someone want to look at a file for someone that came in the 90s or something, we're not going to have that at the National Archives yet.
Why just up through 1952?
Well, records created by the federal government, they're all retired by strict record schedules. And these Leavenworth files actually weren't originally scheduled to be kept. But there was a little bit of a records manager battle saying that they were very important, and they made the decision to keep them. And 1952 was just the year that they were through at that point. Huh. We should be receiving more records at some point from Leavenworth and moving that date forward from 1952.
You know, I thought you guys never got rid of any records. There was a battle over whether to keep them or not?
That was before they went to the National Archives. Oh. Everything that comes to the National Archives, once it belongs to the National Archives, it's kept forever. So these Leavenworth files, they're our responsibility to keep forever.
You know, people are always so interested in the archives for genealogy reasons, and we'll talk about that during our conversation here. If people want to see these inmate files, where do they go to access them?
Well, there's a number of things they can do. We have online, both on Ancestry.com and Archives.gov, indexes of individuals listed. So someone can search those sites just to see who's available. And then the best thing to do is to contact the National Archives. You know, send us an email or give us a call and let us know what it is you're looking for. And we'll look into it, because a lot of times you have common names that, you find someone you think it may be an ancestor, and you look into birth dates or places, things like that, and you see that it's not a match. So if you're interested, you can search online, or you can just give us a call or send us an email.
And you guys are there to help folks out as they do these searches for themselves then?
Certainly. Certainly. Yeah. We are the experts in the records that we have. We are the experts in what else, other locations of the National Archives, what records they have. So we really pride ourselves in being able to guide people to where, whether we have the records or if someone else does, to find what they're looking for.
Well, with that said, let's get our listeners involved here. Perhaps you have a question about how to search for ancestry reasons, or you have a question about Leavenworth Penitentiary itself. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can email us at updatedate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCUR Up to Date. Why would Joan Q. Citizen be interested in files about the old inmates? What kinds of reasons have you stumbled across over the years?
Well, there's a number of reasons. They're most commonly used for genealogy. I mean, there's a
even
black
prisoners
sheep.
Had families.
Yeah, there's a black sheep in every family, and with 69,000 individuals in our files, there's a lot of people that went there.
Yeah.
And they have amazing details on individuals. So if you're looking for genealogy, you know, that's a fantastic way to find out about your past. But of course, we've also had authors. And there's some famous people that went in there looking for details on them, or maybe not even famous people looking for trends, you know, historical trends, things like that.
Yeah.
Teachers and students doing research for classes and projects. Any number of reasons that someone could want to look at these files.
What can people find out once they get into the files about any one prisoner that we're talking about here today, Jake? What's there to be viewed?
Well, one of the most eye-catching things right off the bat is your mugshot. You know, you enter the prison, they take a photograph of you. And we've had people that have said, we don't have any pictures of their great-grandfather. Their mugshot becomes the only photo they ever have seen of their great-grandfather.
And what a great honor that is, I'm sure, for the family. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But right when they enter the prison, I mean, they take down all the information about who they are, where they were from, what their family was, what their background was, their occupation, their physical features. All that information is taken down right off the bat. And then their activities in prison. If they had to go to the hospital for any reason, mail coming in and out, they track who they're corresponding with. And then, of course, sometimes they would keep copies of correspondence or telegrams, which can be really some of the most fascinating parts of the records are records of someone writing to their family or writing to a business associate or writing to a lawyer, and that going back and forth that really can fill out the details of someone's story of why they were there.
So you get the sense that the prisoners were better documented than the average citizen out there.
Well, in many ways, yes. Later on, they would do full psychological analysis. They do background analysis on these individuals. And the prison had a reason. They wanted to know who it is they're working with. Knowing their background, you're more likely to know what type of problems could come up, what type of situations are best to keep avoided or things like that. So,
and all that information is available to me to look at.
Yeah. Now, the only restrictions there are, because you can have some very, very personal or private information that show up in these files, there is a standard 75-year limit on restrictions. Files created older than 75 years ago, those are open. More recent, you could have redactions necessary for personal information for other people. To view the file, you either need a proof of death. That could be an obituary or a death certificate or the Social Security Death Index, something like that.
So once someone has passed on, then all the material inside a file is available to the public?
Well, everything about them. Once you die, you kind of lose your privacy.
Yeah.
But let's say you have a file that has information about their child, that child has a right to their privacy too. So we would either need approval from that individual or proof of death for that individual, or we'd have to redact those names.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We're talking about with the National Archives about all the records available about the prisoners that once stayed at the Leavenworth Penitentiary. And the files go back. What's the earliest file you have from the penitentiary itself, Jake?
Right from the beginning, 1895.
Wow.
The very first inmates in, inmate number one ended up coming back later, so his file is stored with that later number. But inmate number two, and they numbered individuals by
– consecutively.
Yes. So the first person admitted is inmate number one. You become that number all the way on.
Those things never make as much sense as you just said it does. It just number one, two, three, all the way through then.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the final one was 69,000.
The final one that we have in our holdings right now is 69,937.
We received this question from a listener, Jake. Is there any film footage of the boxer Jack Johnson, the great boxer Jack Johnson, who was an inmate at Leavenworth in his early, when he was 19 and 20 years old?
We don't have any film footage of him. Now, interesting enough, we have, when he was in Leavenworth, there was a fellow inmate that helped him write a biography of sorts. And that other inmate's biography, it's kind of an autobiography, and he helped, Johnson helped write it. That's part of our holdings. That. Now, with the National Archives, there is a little bit of a unique aspect of, these very, very notorious individuals. The National Archives of Washington, D.C. has some of those. Like Jack Johnson, most of his file went to the National Archives of Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And there's some other individuals like that where their file's in Washington, D.C. rather than here. But
So does the National Archives in D.C. get to sort of cherry pick some of the best stuff?
Well, in this case, they did. They call it the Notorious Offenders Files.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your big-time gangsters that hit the newspapers in the 30s, the ones that survived. Their files will be there, or people like Jack Johnson or famous politicians or things of that nature.
Jake Ursland of the National Archives is our guest. We're talking about the National Archives and records that are available on prisoners from the Leavenworth Penitentiary. You know, one thing that's in these files is something called the Daily Work Record. What does that show, Jake, and what kind of work are we talking about here?
Well, all the inmates, most of the inmates, they'd be assigned to specific duties in prison. I mean, when you're in prison, what do? They have to keep you busy. And they had like a broom factory. You know, they'd actually produce brooms. Or you could have duties in the lunchroom or duties in the mail room or different things like that. And so they would log where individual was assigned to work and then, you know, their days there.
How much money do they get paid for that stuff?
Well, it wasn't very much. You know, I don't have an exact amount.
It's like
It depends on your time, but it was not very much. It could be pennies or later on, you know, only dollars.
Yeah, I was really struck that some of the inmates you had at Leavenworth, just going through your PowerPoint presentation, Jake, you know, some of those inmates, were there for adultery. I mean, that was a crime that put them in a federal penitentiary out in Kansas. That strikes me as pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. Now, you got to remember, it starts in 1895. So there's, you know, places that are territories, like Oklahoma Territory. And so criminal cases from Indian Territory, you know, it's now Oklahoma, they would be held before a federal court. You know, territorial court's a federal court. So if you're convicted there, you're sent to a federal penitentiary, which is, at that point, Leavenworth.
Yeah.
So you have all kinds of seemingly odd violations that people get sent there. And of course, you have things that, you know, make more sense, you know, robbing, you know, post office or interstate crimes, you know, stealing vehicles and driving across state lines. It becomes federal.
Right, so. Right. Absolutely. There's also, as you mentioned, this personal correspondence that's available there. What have you learned from sort of going through those letters over the years? Because I imagine, again, you must pick up some pretty interesting tidbits about these folks.
All sorts of things. Like I said, I mean, you do have the big, famous, notorious individuals. We're looking at some of their correspondence. It's pretty interesting, too. Like John Dillinger's lawyer was Louis Paquette, and he went to Leavenworth.
Huh.
And in it, it's got a letter from his wife talking about how much harder it is now that her husband, Louis Paquette, is in Leavenworth and talks about their lifestyle before, you know, and she even refers to how he could provide anything she wanted. You know, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you have this big-time lawyer who represented gangsters like John Dillinger and what his wife's life was like and what her opinions about how their hardships with him being in. And you contrast that with, you know, in the 1920s, you know, you go in for prohibition. You could be – I remember when I was an intern going through these files, you know, creating a database, you know, page by page going through the records, which was fascinating. You get right into the records and you see everything that's there. I remember seeing a letter from a farmer was sent in for violation of the prohibition, mid-20s, I think 1925. And he had a pretty short sentence, maybe a couple years at most. And in it is captured the correspondence of his wife to him. And she's writing about, you know, how hard it is with the four kids at home.
Wow.
And how anxious she is for him to get home. And, you know, you're thinking about this time period. And of course, you know, of course it'd be hard. Of course it'd be hard to get by. And it was interesting. He's almost to be let out. And there's a letter from this woman saying how excited she is to see him. How excited is she for him to come home? And the very next piece of correspondence I found, I flipped over, is a letter from the warden to her stating that there was an accident on scaffolding in the cafeteria and he had passed away.
Oh my
and that
gosh.
Was it. And, you know, it's just devastating.
Oh, my God.
It's just devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's really surprising to hear that. And you would love to know, like, what happened next.
What
then,
happened
right?
next is
yeah.
exactly right.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you do find a little bit of what happens next. You know, not in that one, but I recently had a reference request. Someone was actually doing genealogy. They came across their grandfather. It was a great-grandfather, his name, and they inquired about the file. You know, so I went and pulled the file, you know, provided the information. And when looking through it, I found he had been released from Leavenworth. And it was 1931 or 1932, in that area, in the Great Depression. He'd been released to Leavenworth, and there's a letter he wrote back to the warden. Now, okay. when you're an inmate, you have, unless you have a life sentence, you have things called, something called good time, where, you know, if you have good behavior in prison, you can be let out a little bit earlier than, you know, your maximum sentence. And this individual had been let out on good time, and he wrote back to the warden wondering if he could go back to Leavenworth for the duration of his good time because the depression was so bad he could not find a job.
Oh, my God.
So bad he actually wrote the warden after asking if he could go back to prison.
Do you know what the warden – how he responded?
Yeah, his correspondence was there, and the warden suggested that he look up local charity institutions to help get him by. And the individual said that 20 to 40% of the population was out of work. And he could not find a job. And it's just amazing.
It's a great story.
That puts you right into the depression, and you get a sense of how bad things were.
Jake Ursland from the National Archives is our guest. He'll be speaking about the National Archives Record Group 129, the inmate case files for the Leavenworth Penitentiary, this Sunday at 2 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch at 14 West 10th Street. You can visit kclibrary.org for more information and to reserve a seat. That's this Sunday at 2, kclibrary.org for more information. Let's go to some phone calls here. Suzanne from Leavenworth County. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning. I had heard from, I can't even get her relation correctly, but her grandfather was my grandmother's uncle, and he was in Leavenworth right around 1900 because he's from the Cherokee branch of the family, and he had taken alcohol onto the Cherokee reservation there in Oklahoma, and apparently that was so common that, you know, for them to be convicted and sent to Leavenworth, that it was known as Cherokee Road there from the reservations up to Leavenworth, or Whiskey Road. That was the name for it down in the Cherokee reservation.
Yeah, we have lots of files on individuals who are convicted specifically of that. He was introducing liquor, into Indian territory. So you have
right.
You have all kinds of people that for that violation were sent to Leavenworth, and of course, individuals up in the North and South Dakota, when it is Dakota Territory, we have criminal records that cover that too. Yeah, that predate Leavenworth.
Yeah, Suzanne, I'm glad you called. Thank you. And again, just so I'm clear, Jake, the National Archives would have copies of personal letters. Why are those available? Why weren't they taken out by the prisoner when he left the penitentiary? Why do you guys have copies of those letters?
Well, they created files on these individuals, to document them. And unfortunately, a lot of them ended back up in prison. And their file would be reassigned to that new inmate number. They are documenting their past once again to know who they are, what they're dealing with. Now, they didn't keep all the correspondence at all.
Yeah.
But anything that the prison viewed as, important or telling about that individual, they would keep. And it could be conditions at home. Is there stressful things going on at home?
And can you see the actual – those letters online, or do you have to go to the archives to actually get – to handle the letter, or how does that work?
Yeah, to actually view the records, you can, of course, come to the National Archives. And anytime you come to the National Archives, it's always best to call or email first. That way we have time to locate what you're looking for, communicate with you about that.
You're just west of Union Station now.
We're just next to Union Station. That's right. And like I said, since there's possible restrictions, we'd have to screen the files, make sure everything's ready for someone to view, because if there's any reason something need to be redacted, we have to do that ahead of time. So definitely call ahead of time. But then, yeah, you could come in and actually view the record yourself.
Actually handle the letter?
Actually handle the letter. If you wanted, you could bring a camera and get a picture of it, or you could copy it or scan it or anything like that if you'd want to, get that image.
Yeah.
But there are people that, of course, can't come here. They can't make it to Kansas City. They live on the other side of the country, possibly. So people will order copies or scans, but they'll send an email or call and tell us what they're wanting. We'll communicate with them, and for a fee, we'll copy and send that to them.
Huh.
It's a nominal fee?
Yeah. What the fee is, it's $20 for the first 25 copies and 80 cents a page thereafter.
Wow. Not bad. Okay. Austin from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Jake Ursland from the National Archives. Nice to have you, Austin.
Well, it's just a little different story. I played semi-pro baseball around Kansas City since back in the late 40s and 50s and 60s. And we used to go up there and play ball once or twice a year if they didn't have anything. If they didn't have anything bad going on there, whether it's locked down or something. Because we went over to Lansing and played, too, three or four times a year. But we used to go there about once a year, twice a year, Leavenworth.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's exactly right. Now, Leavenworth, the Prisoners, they had formed their own baseball teams. I mean, they had a baseball diamond inside the walls of Leavenworth. You would even have different groups of drug offenders that would form their own teams, like, you know, the Cocaines or something like that. But, yeah, you would have individual teams that would travel and actually even play against the prison team, the prisoner team.
Who'd win those games, Austin?
We better win because they'd bet their money on us all the time.
Yeah, one of the more unique instances, there was a member of the Monarchs, Lemuel Hawkins, I believe was his name. And he traveled to Leavenworth with the Monarchs, and they played a game there. And fortunately, later on, he committed a crime and was sent to Leavenworth and played with the Leavenworth baseball
team. Both sides,
team.
Of,
both
the,
sides
of the roster
inside
there.
Of Leavenworth.
Austin, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. You know, Jake, I love the quote. Again, it's in your PowerPoint presentation that you'll be giving on Sunday at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. The quote from the warden of Leavenworth from 1901, "Leavenworth is hell," he said, "and I guess I'm the chief devil." Pretty well said.
Yeah, pretty well said. Yeah, life certainly could be very rough for an individual in there. I mean, not only just you know the fact that your freedom's given up. You don't have time to do what you want to do. But you know, with the rough characters in there, there were murders in prison. You know, inmate on inmate crime, and of course, you know, in any prison, sometimes there are different prison gangs that form, and intimidation and violence and such could happen. You know, of course, the prison would try do their best to prevent that type of thing, but it happened.
Let's go to David from Kansas City, Missouri. David, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. The question that I have for you, the first job that I had out of school, I was selling office equipment, and I had a job for Leavenworth Prison. And I asked the head guy at the printing office who the most famous guy was who tried to escape. And he gave me a name of Trapnell, who evidently was in there in the 70s, I think, and he had some buddies to try to fly a helicopter into Leavenworth and get him out. And I wondered, did your host know anything about that?
What about the helicopter escape, Jake?
Well, I'll tell you what I know about that. Nothing.
Just to summarize it nicely, yeah.
Sorry, since our files ended in 1952, there's a lot of things that happened, you know, post-1952 that are really of note, and at some point, hopefully, will be part of our holdings, and then you can research those things then.
When would you expect it to be available?
Well, it depends. Like I said, the records are all on strict schedules on when they're eligible to be accessioned. So we have a batch of records that are due this year, so we're trying to get those to be accessioned in now.
If David wanted to call you and find out when they're available, I imagine he could do that, right?
Well, you could call and you could talk about that. I wouldn't know exactly which files specifically until we got the boxes that would be coming in. But
I think this guy was in for hijacking a plane, and that's all I know about him. Never read or heard anything else about him.
Yeah, I've heard about that story too, David. I'm glad you brought it up because that does ring a bell with me too. I bet it's a heck of a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate the call, David. Thank you.
Thank you.
What about where the records, the warehouses where records are actually kept, Jake? What can you tell us about that? Maybe the records that haven't been processed yet, I guess we're talking about.
Yeah. I've been talking about our archival Leavenworth case files. They're part of our holdings at the National Archives of Kansas City. Those are all records that are accessioned, that are belonging to the National Archives. And once that happens, they're permanent. And we have over 70,000 cubic feet of records, which is, you know, what is 70,000 cubic feet of records? You know, it's millions.
A lot of records.
Millions of sheets of paper. We have over 10,000 bound volumes, tens of thousands of photographs, et cetera. But, you know, you have all of the records created by the federal government that are in the Federal Record Center. So a lot of these are records that most of them won't be kept permanently. Some of them eventually will be, but most of them won't. You know, you think about all the things that the government produces on a day-to-day basis. You know, there's millions of boxes with it. And so we have our storage at our location downtown Union Station, and we have over 20,000 cubic feet of records there. And it's pretty large. When someone goes in there, they're very impressed about how just how much we have there. But of course, there's storage out at the Lee Summit Caves in Lenexa. The Federal Record Center's there, and there's archival storage there that it's just amazing how much is out there.
And you can retrieve that stuff. You can actually go in and figure out where it is and pull it out of there.
Yeah, all the archival stuff that's the stuff that's been accessioned that they're in those locations, yeah, we can retrieve and depending on restrictions, people can do reference on those, yeah.
Now, wasn't there a final scene in one of the Indiana Jones movies, some huge warehouse? Was that the real McCoy?
That wasn't the real McCoy,
yeah,
but everyone that walks into like one of our Federal Record Centers, you know, they are brought to mind of that scene. You know, when I when I was an intern, to be honest, you know, years ago when I was an intern, and they walked me through the stacks at the archives back when it said Bannister, and then walked. Then we walked into the Federal Record Center and just shelf after shelf after shelf after shelf with all the boxes. And I really did think like that. This is amazing. You know, it's like Indiana Jones.
Let's go to Ken from Overland Park. Ken, you're on Up to Date with Jake Ursulin from the National Archives. Nice to have you.
Glad to be here. I've got a story about my grandfather.
Yes, sir.
He was a contractor, a mason, bricklayer, stonemason contractor. And he and several other contractor firms were involved with building the prison. And during the course, or while the prison was being built, evidently he had some prisoners that were assigned to his crew that were going to, help him build a prison, or build a prison. Anyhow, they had a riot during one of these sessions when he was there. And he told this one particular prisoner that if he would stay with him and out of the way and not be involved with the riot, that he would see that he wouldn't be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, evidently the prisoner did, and my grandfather died in 1922. And about 1925, there was a knock on the door, and this black prisoner came to the door and told my grandmother that he'd like to see my grandfather. Anyhow, she said, well, he passed away several years ago. And the guy left a brick, and it was a concrete-type brick. And on the front, it had the Holy Bible. And anyhow, it was about 6x6 and about 2 inches thick.
Hmm.
And they used it for a doorstop around the house because, anyhow, he wanted to give this brick to my grandfather.
Yeah.
And they used it for a doorstop around the house for years, and I gave it to one of my daughters here about 5 years ago.
That's a good story, Ken. I'm glad you shared it with. That's a really good story.
Well, I have one more if you got time.
Yeah, go quick, yeah.
Okay. I was dating the deputy warden's daughter up there at the penitentiary, and he lived on the far west side, or they lived on the far west side. And I got her in kind of late at night one night, and I didn't want her mother and dad to know how late I got her in. So I pulled on up to the front of the prison and turned to the right, and got up to where the tower is, and here comes the spotlight down on the car. I'm in trouble now. It's about 3 in the morning. Anyhow, I shut off the engine because my muffler wasn't working, and I heard this guard hollering at me. He says, what are you doing up here? And I said, well, I just dropped the deputy warden's daughter off, and I said, I'm on my way home. He said, well, get on out of here and don't come back. Well, you can be sure I didn't drive across the front of that prison ever again.
Ken, I'm glad you called. That's a good phone call. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah. You know, you have a series of photographs, Jake, in connection with your presentation coming up this weekend under the heading of What Was I Convicted Of? And one of the photos is of a man who's been convicted of larceny. I don't know if you can conjure up what he looks like as I'm talking about it here, but he looks absolutely scared out of his mind. And I would love to know what the story was behind that guy. He just looked terrified to be where he was at that particular moment, eyes sort of bugging out and just nervous.
Well, that's the interesting thing about a mugshot. I mean, it really is taking a picture of someone on probably the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people have a confident look on their face. Other people are, you know, very, very nervous to be in front of the camera, and others, really are terrified about the fact that they're entering prison. I believe that individual.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Can I know.
Dark hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe that individual. they do psychological analysis, and analyzed his analysis. It was of a. What they called a lesser intellect is what they put. I don't know.
Maybe everything's connected. You also make the point that the history of the country can be tracked through the history of the inmates at Leavenworth. How so? What are you talking about there?
Well, you have different eras, right? Mm-hmm. As the West is ending, closing down, you know, with Indian Territory, 1895, you have some of, you know, some of those crimes that are associated with, you know, the West, that, you know, individuals could be sent to Leavenworth for, you know, like introducing liquor to, you know, Indian Territory or things like that. So you have that era, and then you have the era of, you know, the big bank robbers, that just covered the countryside and covered the headlines, you know, John Dillinger and all that. Well, there's associates of those people that ended up in Leavenworth. They helped them. So they ended up being convicted for aiding a federal fugitive.
Oh, it's all very interesting. Again, Jake Ursland speaks about the National Archives Record Group 129, the inmate case files for the Leavenworth Penitentiary. That'll happen this coming Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Kansas City Public Library downtown at 14 West 10th Street. More information, kclibrary.org. Jake, you've been great. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Thank you.